Hi guys, welcome to Sports Spectrum. We have one of the best conversations we've had in a long time today with a guy named Mike Furry. You might not know that name. He's the head coach coaching football at Limestone University down in South Carolina. It's a Division II school. He's also a former NFL wide receiver and a former NFL defensive back. I'm not going to expand on that anymore because Mike Furry has lived one incredibly blessed life. When you think about the journey that he was on, he walked on at Ohio State, went to Northern Iowa, excelled there, was undrafted, got to the Colts training camp in 2000, didn't make the team, played in the XFL, the original XFL, back in 2001, then the Arena Football League for a couple years, and then a really cool story that he shares on the podcast of how he got to the St. Louis Rams, the then St. Louis Rams, and started his NFL journey with the Rams in 2003. He was a defensive back in 2005, converted from wide receiver, and had four picks. I mean, he did really well. He had a pick six in 2005 with the Rams. The next year, he ends up with the Lions, and he has 98 receptions for over 1,000 yards and six touchdowns. So defensive back, four picks. A year later, wide receiver, 98 receptions. That's Mike Furry. Mike got kind of brought onto my radar from my friend Dan Orlovsky, and you know, Mike has had a huge impact on Dan's life. There's a lot here. Let's just put it that way. And I can't wait for you to hear the entire story of Mike Furry. It's coming up in just a second. First, I want to remind you about our friends at Compassion International. Great friends, great partners with us here at Sports Spectrum, releasing kids from poverty in Jesus' name. That's what they are all about. You can go to compassion.com/sportsspectrum to sponsor a child right now that is in extreme poverty. You'll see a list of children there. You can pick the child. Some of them have been waiting for more than 2 years. Places like Ethiopia and Uganda, Sri Lanka. Go to compassion.com/sportsspectrum and really pray about releasing a child, sponsoring a child, and giving them a chance, giving them hope in Jesus' name. compassion.com/sportsspectrum. We're also presented today by our Sports Spectrum magazine. Go check out sportsspectrum.com and click that magazine icon. It's a quarterly magazine, and we'd love to get that to you as a chance for you to read stories, really cool, impactful stories about Jesus and about sports. Our issue that's out right now features Kirk Cousins from the Minnesota Vikings on the cover, the Minnesota Vikings lead man, and he tells about his story of Jesus and football. If you're looking for clean content, it's hard to find clean sports content today. Just go to social media or turn on the television, and it's hard, let's just say, to find something that's age appropriate for kids. Well, this magazine is just that. You can get the Sports Spectrum magazine right now by subscribing at sportsspectrum.com. Click the magazine icon, and don't forget to put in the code podcast15, podcast15. Podcast15 is the code, and you can save 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. Again, the website, sportsspectrum.com. He is Mike Furry, the former NFL wide receiver, now the head coach at Limestone University. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. I appreciate you having me on here, and this is going to be a lot of fun.
It is. I'm glad that we were able to connect. Your name has popped up. I can't tell you how many times, especially in the conversations I've had with Dan Orlovsky. I know you and Dan are tight, and you were an influential person on Dan's faith, because every time we talk, especially when we talk about Christ and we talk about the Lord, your name pops up every time. So it feels like this was a conversation that was meant to happen, Mike.
Well, I was very fortunate when I got a chance to sign with the Detroit Lions and go to Detroit, and my wife and I, Corn, we both moved there. And the first thing we did was we got involved in with Dave Wilson, who was our team chaplain in Detroit.
Yeah.
And then, of course, John Kitna, Josh McCown was heavily involved with Dave. And then we had this little young quarterback, this up and coming quarterback that couldn't let go of his Connecticut days. And it was just like a wet puppy, you know, in the league, and really trying to make it, trying to stay in and do all those kind of things. And then all of our relationships, Sean and I and Josh and Danny, have just formed. To this day, we have a group chat that's just us guys. And it's really neat, but it was obviously started by our faith, or, you know, what we believe in. I think it grew because of the respect that we had for each other because of the way we lived. And the coolest thing is to see Danny, watch him grow up a little bit, kind of, thinking you have a little bit of something to do with the man that he's become and him. And it's been great to watch.
Yeah, that's we're gonna get into that, and even how you got to Detroit and got into that locker room is a fascinating story.
Remember, we don't have it more than 30
I
minutes.
know
So,
we
yeah,
got we got to get the
we're
book,
gonna knock it out.
the Mike Furry autobiographical, book that we need to get someday and read, because there's so much to your career. Here's what I'll ask you this, because it's not just playing with coaching. It's been really an interesting journey that's brought you to Limestone, left to go to the NFL, back to Limestone. I'm just curious, is there a word when you think about it to describe these past 3 decades of football that between playing and coaching?
I think it in the beginning I thought it was resilience. They're just a resiliency of all the trials and tribulations, which we all talk about, the biblical trials and tribulations that you got to go through in order to persevere. And to me, that you become stronger and more courageous, through your experiences. But so probably my playing days, I would say the resilience of being resilient. I think as I've grown into the profession of coaching, I would really, I don't think there's really one word that would describe it. The only thing I can think about now is it all makes sense. My whole career makes sense because of what I'm doing today. What I've been through as a player all makes sense now, because I get to sit behind this desk and be able to, I get to meet with kids on a daily basis and help them through their journey, whether it's relationships or it's football or it's school or it's, family life struggles or things like that. And it's like, wow, God has put me through all those things to be able to sit here, not to tell you how I overcome them, but just to be able to sit here as a brother to you, as a father figure to you, and say, listen, okay, I know it's possible to get out of that, and let's do it together. Because, selfishly and quietly, I've been through all those things. And so resilient because I went through it, full circle in regards to now I know why God, I always say this, Jason, I tell people all the time, God didn't make me a football player to wear a yellow jacket. That wasn't that God didn't make me a football player to make a yellow jacket, to wear a yellow jacket. I believe that God made me who I am and go through what I've been through because he knew I was going to be a coach and be able to impact these kids' lives and affect them, and what we say all the time around here, make a difference in these kids' lives because of what I've gotten to do, and not what I've done, just what I've been through to be able to help these kids, and it's been great.
What is Mike Furry like, the coach, on a Saturday getting ready for a game, compared to Mike Furry, the player, when he was getting ready to play on a Sunday?
There's no difference.
Same guy.
It's the same guy, I've been highly competitive my whole entire life. I've had a chip on my shoulder my whole entire life because of everybody said what I couldn't do or what I couldn't accomplish. Between, as you and I both know, that when you live by faith, not by sight, and when you give it all to Christ and you allow His will to be done, to me, that's when I believe that all things are possible. And I'm not saying that all things are possible in regards that we get what we want. I just think it makes it where God makes all things possible that we can go through whatever we're about to face. That's still with me. I still have a chip on my shoulder a little bit. I'm proud of our team. I just don't have to go out and execute no more and get hit and do all those kind of things. But the competitiveness, the fire, the juice, the energy, the passion to see, the passion to watch. The best way I can describe it, Jason, is my last 3 years, I knew I was going to coach. And the last 3 years when I played, I started training kids in the off season, and I had more fun and I was more passionate about those kids' success when they went to college or when they went back to high school to perform that fall, watching them gain the accolades or watching them go through what they went through or watching them succeed. I had more fun doing that than playing, and that's how I coach, and that's what I have to this day. And I'll tell you, when that leaves one day, then that's the good Lord says time to hang up.
Yeah, that I can sense that in terms of, especially you go back to that word resilience, right? Like you said, and it's interesting to look at your journey, because you walked on, I believe, at Ohio State, and then transferred to Northern Iowa, and then you go undrafted. So like the resilience factor is, to the umpteenth me measure, if you will, number of you trying to overcome just to get to, even get to the NFL. It feels like that there was so much there. The odds were stacked against you. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, you know, it's been a not to go back too far, but it's been and I've always liked it that way, to be honest with you. I think I became comfortable with it. But, you know, I was 4 years behind my older brother who was drafted out of high school to the major leagues, and I was always a little furry, and so I was already behind the eight ball, and he was going to be the one that made it, and I wasn't. And then I got a chance to my senior year was runner up to player of the year in Ohio to Charles Woodson, and he was going to Michigan, and I had no offers at all, and then got a chance to walk on at Ohio State, and became one of the fastest guys at Ohio State. Broke the shuttle record at Ohio State, so I figured I was, you know, would get an opportunity to get a scholarship. That didn't happen. They thought maybe I was just a hometown hero kid and would stay around a little bit longer and always grow up. You know, that's all you wanted to do, right? Was play at Ohio State. And
Yeah.
so why would I ever leave? But I had bigger plans and bigger goals, and I lived for a bigger person, and so I ended up leaving and went to Northern Iowa in the middle of nowhere and was a three-time All-American. Couldn't wait to get drafted, and then didn't get drafted. And it's just everywhere I've gone, it's been pretty cool. And even now to this day, you know, it's I ask the I don't ask God. I just think it's funny. I think God's got a great sense of humor in my path. But you know, I retired in 2010. I got an opportunity to go be a head coach at a Christian school, Kentucky Christian, down in Grayson, Kentucky. No football field, no team have won. I think they won one game in 4 years or something like that.
Wow.
And so that was the plan that God put me on. What's funny is 2 years later, a buddy of mine, Chad Pennington, who I was with the New York Jets, traveled by and went by Kentucky Christian every Saturday to the Marshall game, which was 30 minutes down the road. And so he called and was like, "Why don't you come to Marshall?" So I went to Marshall and had a phenomenal time over there for 3 years, and we were very, very successful. And then again, good Lord had a sense of humor. A school down in South Carolina called Limestone University, who has won one game and didn't have a football field and all that kind of stuff, called and wanted to know if I wanted to be the head coach. And so it's been funny how it's all worked out. Just kind of, you know, and I think it's just the reason, you know, it's I don't know what it is now. I just, you know, when you know, Joshua 1:9 tells you that, you know, no matter what, God's always with you wherever you go. And if you believe in him, he's going to put you where he wants you to be by his will. And at that point in time, you got all the strength and the courage in the world to go accomplish what you want to accomplish. And I just believe that when God puts you in those moments, without trying, I think would be denying his, you know, denying what he wants you to become, you know. And but when you go in with everything that you have and you overcome those situations and you just keep grinding it out, I thank God every day for who I am, you know, and what he's made me because of what I've been through. And again, why? Because now I can impact the kids' lives. I can communicate with my kids. I can talk to our kids. I say, listen, you know, listen, no matter what you can, whatever, no matter what you go through in life, there's always an end, right? There's always an
Yes.
end, and you get to choose what that end is like. And a lot of it has to be either you're resilient or you quit, right? And I'm here because we're not quitting, and I'm going to be here because we're not quitting. And then the greatest gratification, you know, rather it's you know, I've been to Super Bowls, I've been to, you know, played in playoff games in the league, I've coached, whatever it is, all those things. There is nothing like watching a kid overcome some things that he didn't think he can overcome, and then all of a sudden his career takes off because he went through that moment. And to me, now you got not only a great friend for life, but you got somebody that you can trust for the rest of your life. And I think those relationships are a lot more important than jewelry and everything else that sometimes you go through.
100%. You use that word overcomer, and it made me think, okay, Northern Iowa, the Rams, Overcomer, which was a movie 2 years ago about Kurt Warner's life. And your story has a little bit of Kurt Warner story in it, I think. Is that something that, especially when you got to the Rams, I don't even know if you got to talk to Kurt when or if he was in the Rams and you guys overlapped, but have you had conversations with him at all about like his journey and your journey a little bit? Kind of paralleling itself.
So I need to write a book one day because this is obviously in the book. But so I played at Northern Iowa. Kurt was at Northern Iowa, and when I was at Northern Iowa, I was a city boy from Ohio. I was a Division I player, and I, you know, I wasn't going to be hanging out with anybody else in Iowa and all that kind of stuff. But all my buddies wanted me to go down to Des Moines, Iowa, to watch this guy play arena ball because he played in Northern Iowa. His name was Kurt Warner. And I was like, you'll never see me down in an arena ever watching a football game, let alone like who in the heck's Kurt Warner. So anyways, like I'm trying to break records here, like at Northern Iowa. I'm trying to erase all their names. Like that's what my goal is. So I don't really care about going to watch Kurt. But fast forward about 3 years later, I was building houses back home. I just got cut by the Indianapolis Colts. I'm sorry, I just got home from the XFL. I actually played in the XFL the first time around.
Yeah.
Came back from the XFL. Got a phone call from a team called the Iowa or the New York Dragons, which was the arena team out in Long Island, who happened to be the Iowa Barnstormers. The year before that, they got bought out in Iowa and got moved to Long Island. And Kurt Warner played for the Iowa Barnstormers. And now here I am playing for the New York Dragons. And, 2 years later, after I got to New York, our stats and everything that we were doing over there was pretty good. And I got a call in week 13 of my second season that a guy by the name of Kurt Warner was coming out with NBC to commentate one of our games. And I had also gotten word that one of our administration guys from the New York Dragons, who was at the Iowa Barnstormers, had also called Kurt and said, listen, I know you guys just got rid of, Ricky Prohl just went to Carolina. I got a wideout for you that you need to see. And he went to Northern Iowa. And Kurt said, I'm going to come check him out this weekend because I'm commentating the game. Kurt came and commentated the game. Kurt came down in the locker room afterwards, handed me a cell phone. It was the St. Louis Rams. And they offered me a contract right then and there with Kurt.
Wow.
And Kurt then took me out to St. Louis the next day. We went back out to St. Louis and started OTAs. And the reason why I made it and got a chance to be in the National Football League was a great friend of mine to this day is Kurt Warner. So the high V, the story and all that stuff, I tell Kurt, he actually, I think it was a couple months ago, he was messing around. He said, you see my movie yet? I said, bro, I lived your movie. Like, I don't need to see that. I've been to the high V. I know it all, man.
Yeah.
I played for your arena team, but, I think our stories are a little bit different, but I think there's a lot of similarities, what he had to go through and then where he ended up with the yellow jacket, like Kurt will tell you to this day, like Kurt's, he'll tell you like coaching is not like something that he wants to do 7 days a week.
Right.
But he's got the yellow jacket. Like that was God's plan for him. And that's his platform, the TV and his social media and what he can do and how he can make an impact. That was his plan. That was God's plan for him. Mine was different. Mine was to go through all those things a little bit so that I could come coach. And so I think there's a lot of similarities into the way that we got into it. But I wouldn't have got into it as I did if it wasn't for Kurt Warner, and which obviously ended up being Mike Martz and all that stuff. And they kept me around and my 8 year career started.
That's an awesome story. I didn't know all of that. I figured there was some connection with Kurt, but
there's so much more to that story that I mean, there's.
All right, Mike. So I'm going to connect you with a literary agent when we're done and you need to write your book. All right, man.
That whole St. Louis thing. That whole St. Louis thing was, I could write a book about just that scenario of there's so many things that went on and it was crazy.
Well, that's why I want to remind people that 2005, you were converted to be a defensive back, had four picks, by the way, a pick six and really did well. And then it's the year later you go to Detroit and you catch 96 balls and 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That feels just like a book, like an entire book on the 05 Mike Furry, the 06 Mike Furry, and how God was weaving and putting all that story together, because people don't do the person I thought of right away was like Deion Sanders was the only guy I remember who was a legit, obviously Hall of Fame defensive back. And then when he went to Dallas in, I think it was 96, they made him their second receiver, their third receiver. And he caught like 50 balls, but I haven't seen a guy make that transition in back-to-back seasons the way you were doing it.
I didn't either. And matter of fact, when Mike Martz came over to me and said, we're going to move you over to safety for OTAs, I went home. My wife said, well, we were packing our house up because he's just really nice and he loves you. And he's just trying to make it easy to tell you that you're cut. But, we were so stacked in St. Louis with Isaac Bruce, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Steven Jackson, Kevin Curtis, Sean McDonald, Dane Looker, and then myself. Like, that was our offense, you
Yeah.
know? And and Mike loved to dress six wideouts. And my first year in St. Louis, Kevin Curtis and Sean McDonald got hurt. So it was just me, Dane, Isaac, and Torrey. So here I am catching 20 some balls on a team that went 12-4, and we're supposed to go to the Super Bowl until we got beat by Steve Smith on the 70-yard touchdown in double overtime.
Yeah.
Well, the next year, I was often on the roster up and down because of everybody was healthy. And so, long story short, after my year two, Mike March came to me and said, "Listen, I got an idea. If you can play safety, which I know you know every position at wideout, if you could play safety, then I can dress you as the fifth or sixth receiver. If we got to get you out of a game or safety out of a game, you can go over and be our fourth safety. And now you can dress every Sunday." So, and again, you know me now. I was like, whatever, I'm in. I don't care.
Right.
Whatever I can do, I'm in. And so ended up going through OTAs that summer. And then Mike March came back to me before training camp, 4 weeks to go in training camp. I was 185 pounds. And Mike came to me and said, "Listen, if you want to make a full transition to safety, you could actually start a safety for us." And so I went home and gained about 20 pounds in 4 weeks,
Wow.
came back to training camp. And then week three of that season, we had a Monday night game at Indy. Now, see, the first team when I left Northern Iowa was the Indianapolis Colts. So my first mentor was Marvin Harrison. He's the one that took me under his wing when I got to Indy. And I had played against Peyton in the Citrus Bowl when he was at Tennessee. So we had known each other a little bit, just from, you know, history, you know, being able to talk and stuff. And so I was with Peyton, and Marvin got cut. I was the last one cut my rookie year. But then fast forward, now I'm getting ready to start on a Monday night against Marvin and Edgerrin and those guys who I was in the locker room with as a wideout. And now I'm playing safety. And two of the coolest moments that I had in my career are when Peyton looked over and was like, "What the heck are you doing?" And then a couple of years later, I was playing both ways in Cleveland, and I was playing both ways in Cleveland, and we played against the Packers at home, and I had to guard Donald Driver. And I would never forget as Aaron looked over and was, because I'd played against Aaron for probably the 5 or 6 years, you know, St. Louis and Detroit. And he looked over and he's like, "Dude, what, Furry, what are you doing in the slot?" I'm like, "Listen, go somewhere else." But anyways, that was Mike's idea, you know, to be able to dress both ways. And then he turned me in, and then I started 13 games. And you know, you talk about the interception that I had against the New Orleans Saints. Jim Haslam was the head coach down there, and I had picked the ball off against them. I think it was like week 12 or whatever, 13, and took it back for a touchdown. And next Monday, they fired Jim Haslam, and because we beat them. And well, guess they fired Mike March after the season, and guess who they bring in as a D coordinator to St. Louis? Jim Haslam. So my wife and I woke up in the paper one day, and we had been released in the paper, and the St. Louis Dispatch, they had fired me and cut me and
Wait, you found
never
out in
told
the
me.
newspaper? You didn't get a call?
Found out in the newspaper.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. So it's been fun, man. It's been, and again, we just say, "Hey, let's pack the house. That something's gonna happen." You know, God's got a plan. And then Mike March gets the job in Detroit, calls me and says, "How much you weighing?" I said, "I'm 210 pounds. I'm about to go be the best safety in the league." And he said, "Well, I just took the job in Detroit. Welcome to Detroit. You're gonna play slot receiver." And I said, "Coach, I'm 210 pounds." He said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, last year you gained 25 in 4 weeks." He said, "Now you got 4 months to lose 25. So come over here, and I want you to come over here and teach Roy Williams, Corey Bradford, Eddie Drummond, Charles Rogers, rest his soul, and Mike Williams. You know, I want you to come over here and teach these guys my offense." And so I signed a 1 year deal and went over there. And I don't know what it is about week two or week three, but Mike called me in his office week two or week three and said, "You're going to start and never come off the field on offense. So best of luck to you." And ended up with 98 catches, buddy.
1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns. Like that's just, that's crazy to think about when you're, intercepting balls the year before and then, gaining 1,000 yards the next year. All right, there's a game I want to go to in a second, which is particularly the Dallas Cowboys game in 06, because I brought that up to you before we started, and it just brought back memories of when I remember watching you catch a few touchdowns against the team I rooted for since I was a little kid. Before we get to that, let's stop for a minute and pause because you've talked about the Lord, you've talked about God. Just give us a little snapshot, a little snippet of your faith journey and kind of Christ becoming real, becoming Lord, and kind of how that's been for you.
Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of people have they have a moment, right, where it just clicks, right? And a lot of times in people's lives, it's you're going through life where you realize you need help, and the only help you can get is from him. And then it's you start building that relationship, and you become more at peace with yourself, and things start, it's just kind of it's a lot more clear, right? The only thing I can really tell you is since I was 8, 9 years old, I went to church every Sunday, and for some reason, every Sunday, the only thing I ever wanted to do was, grow up and stand in the pulpit and preach God's word. And I've always had that relationship with him. Now I'm not saying I've always lived that right every day. That's human nature. But in the back of my mind, no matter what, or always in the front of my mind, I've always wanted to be a preacher, and I've always fought myself about going to the seminary. Even throughout my career, I wanted to go into the seminary and become, and start my own church and build a church and all those kind of things. And so that's really it. The coolest thing about success, and I believe this 100%, I think that you really maximize your success. The lonelier, the how do I phrase it? I think you maximize your success when you take the journey by yourself, if that makes sense. I think that when you walk a journey, it can't be with 18,000 different things. It's got to be with one man. That's it. It's got to be with God, and that's it. And God tells you, and the Bible tells you that He is first. He is first of all things. He is first. Your wife then is first on earth, right? But it starts with him, and that's it. And for some reason, Jason, for some reason, and thank God for this, but for some reason, I have just been truly attached to him. I went to Ohio State literally almost by myself. When I went to Northern Iowa, right? 3 years in Northern Iowa, there was nobody that went with me, and I was 10 hours away from home, I never went back home. I never went back to Columbus, Ohio. Like I went from Northern Iowa, then I was in Indy, then I was in Vegas in the XFL, and then I was in New York. And so, then I, you know, it, that way it was just him and I, and I can't tell you how many times, I've driven from Columbus to Iowa when I was in school. And I just put the windows down, turned the radio off. And I just felt like you just talking to God, just listening to God, just listening to my conscience, listening to what I want to do. And I was so goal driven on what I wanted to become athletically that I just felt like spiritually, I didn't want anybody to mess that up, if that makes sense. And it's kind of crazy, but I tell people all the time, success is a lonely road. It's got to be a lonely road, because if you don't listen to what God's telling you throughout that journey, you'll never be resilient, right? You'll always listen to the crowd. You'll always listen to your peers or the people that want you to fail. You won't maximize your potential. And so, always wanting to be in the pulpit, I've always felt like I've had a strong relationship with God. I've always trusted God's will. I've been so fortunate for some reason in my life. I'm very, very competitive. I try to go as hard or harder than anybody else, even to this day in the weight room, my guys. When I go down and lift with my guys, like there's nobody gonna outlift me, there's no gonna outwork me. And the reason is because then I believe that when you do those things, and like your shirt, when you do those things and you stay positive and stay full of positive energy, like it's God's will then, right? And if you don't win, then that's God's will. But then I believe God has something bigger for you, or He's trying to teach you something, right? And I just have always been like that.
So you ride solo in the sense of you, it's you and God, right? But then you
That's
get to
it.
Detroit. And you mentioned this earlier, and I want to bring back Dan Orlovsky and certainly talk about John Kitna, who's about as bold as a person as I've ever met. And I know John decently well in terms of just having interviewed him and know how just bold he is about his faith. He
That's
was that
right.
way when he played, and he's still that
Yep.
way. And then you throw Josh McCown into that mix, and you talk about Dave Wilson, who I know Dave and Ann very well. You got a pretty core group of believers there that you come into the locker room with. So this success that you're defining is solo, right? You and God. But there's a pretty good group of people. And I talked about Dan earlier. He talks about you and the impact you've had on his life. So clearly it's not just you know, solo, if you will, or on your own. I mean, obviously it's between you and God, but there's a community that's going on here of believers.
Yeah.
What was that like? Just, and knowing that there was a person like Dan, right?
Yeah.
That you could pour into, that John had poured into, that so many of these guys were able to influence, and now he can do that with other people. Just go through that season a little bit from a spiritual perspective. It sounds like something cool was really happening.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the only thing that I can really remember that's that you know, I, to me, so to me, you know, John was like the pastor, right? So John was the pastor. Josh was like the assistant pastor, and I might have been an elder or
a
whatever
deacon
in the church or whatever they call her. Probably whatever usher. I was the usher, and then Danny was the guy that lights the candles, the altar boy, right? So that's kind of how it was. And so, because I was still young, and John was obviously established, Josh was a little bit more established, and Danny and I were trying to figure it out. But but John, those guys, you know, those guys reference the Bible. It's unbelievable, right? And that can make a complete difference in you. You know, when you walk, if you talk to somebody the wrong way, John might come here a second. Why are you speaking in that way? Now, the cool thing about it was 3 years prior to that, when I got to Detroit, I had a guy that took me under his wing that didn't talk to anybody, and everybody thought he was the most arrogant person in the world, but he lived a lonely journey with God to maximize his potential because he wanted to be a Hall of Famer. Well, that's Isaac Bruce.
Yep. Yeah.
So Ike is just like John. So I'd be in the hot tub, go in the hot tub and whatever. And then say something to Isaac, but hey, what about this route or something like that? Isaac would be like, why do you use that language? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm not talking about the language. I'm talking about the route. So I've been fortunate enough to have like Isaac, Kurt, John, right? And Josh, those guys, kind of the vocal guys, right? The vocal guys. They're very passionate about the word. They can speak the word very well. They live the word because, and they live what they speak. Right. I'm a little bit different. And I think Danny is the same way. Also, when you're around Danny and I, John and them are so they're very passionate about life as well, but Danny and I are more of how just live it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're more about just live it. Right. And so, I tell people all the time, the greatest compliment that I could ever have as a Christian is for somebody to come up to me and say, why do you live like that?
Right.
Why do you act like that? Where does that energy come from?
Yes.
Like, how do you work like that? Right. How do you not stop? Like, do you ever get tired? And then that's my opening of like, no, I don't. And then they say, well, why? And I said, well, because I believe in Jesus Christ. And I believe that the same power that raised him from the dead is in me.
Yeah.
And that's how I live. And so we're all different, right? But to have that community, to be able to sit back and watch those guys go be, you know, like the disciples, right? Let them go be the ones that stand up and be the disciples is great to have around because you heard the word over and over outside of reading it,
mm-hmm.
right? But I was a little bit different in the way that I was just going to maximize my effort and lay it all out on the line. And then whatever God's will would be is going to be God's will. But it is obviously great to have that core right around you. And again, we still talk, like you said, we talk probably once or twice a week in that group chat with Dave and Josh and John and Danny. But I think that the coolest thing about having that core, right? And I think this is really cool is, it was awesome to watch other players watch us, watch the core, watch how John acted, right? Watch how John treated people or watch how we did stuff. Because if we didn't do it, right? If we didn't do it the way the Bible tells you to do it, then somebody said something. But then to us, that was, well, we got your attention, right? Because you're curious about how we live,
right?
You know, but you're also holding us accountable because of how we live. And I don't think you get that when you're by yourself, right? But when you have a core of guys that walk around the locker room like that, you got more guys that have joined, but you also have more guys that are curious about that faith, that want to jump into the faith, like they know it's faith. It's just not cool to live that faith, right? And maybe it's because they don't want to speak like John and those guys speak when they talk about the Bible. Like we get that, but why don't you live it? You know? And I think that was just an open door for us to be able to communicate it. And I don't think that's there unless it's a group, a core group of guys that people watch. And I think that was the coolest thing about our locker room.
An amazing locker room. I've heard stories. I mean, even when Dan, prayed on ESPN earlier this year when the DeMar Hamlin thing happened, and watching and talking to Dave a little bit, and I think Dave had John on and Josh on maybe with Dan or something where they were all connected, and it was just really cool to know that like this is 17 years ago now, and it's still a core group of people that were in. Influencing each other and impacting each other, that you guys built something really special there, which was awesome. It's kind of awesome to see.
It was pretty cool. And but John was Dave and John, they steered that thing. It was awesome. You know, it was I don't, you know, I'm just lucky. And I don't, you know, luck is, I hate to use the word
I know
luck,
what you
right? Because
mean.
it's all planned, but I'm just so fortunate because everywhere I went, it wasn't about playing ball. It was to play ball with everything I had, but the people that I met, right? You know, and rather it was, you know, when I went to Arena, it was a guy by the name of Todd Dachson, who my mom told me to look up because he was a pastor from Nebraska. You know, I was trying to take his job, you know, I was trying to take his job, but he became a mentor of mine when I was in New York. And I still to this day, him and Nagy and I are connected from Arena Ball. You know, when I go to the St. Louis Rams, Isaac and Kurt. When you go to the Detroit Lions, Kitna McCown, Dave Wilson. So it's just, I'm just so humbled to look back and say that I, you know, my mentors, right? My mentors, everywhere I went, there was God. God had a plan for me to be a, you know, to be mentored by somebody. And I believe it's for this moment now to be sitting at this desk to be able to help kids and provide them an opportunity to become successful, not just obviously football wise, but with life and to get to that moment.
So as we wind down, I mentioned this story of this Cowboys game. So I saw Mike Furry and I'm thinking, okay, 2006, I think it was Dallas's last game. They'd already clinched the playoff spot, but I think their playoff seeding might have been a little different. Ultimately, that was the year they ended up going to Seattle and Tony Romo's first year starting, and he muffs the hand. Cowboy fans don't need to relive that moment. But there was a game before that when they were playing Detroit at home. And everybody thought Dallas was just going to roll because I don't think you guys were going into the playoffs and had a whole bunch to play for, but you rolled them. I think you had 38 points or 39 points against Dallas that year, and you had a big game. I know you at least had a big catch in that game. And I brought the game up to you before we started, and you said, "Oh, do I have a story about that game?" So here's the floor, Mike Furry, to share your story about
No,
that game.
it's going to take longer than that, but the Dallas game was pretty neat. That from what I remember, to make sure correctly, if Dallas beat us, I believe that they had home field all the way through. We were not going to the playoffs. If we beat Dallas, then Dallas ended up being a certain seed where they had to go on the road to get, you know, to get to where they needed to get to. And so, you know, about 3 or 4 weeks before that, I was standing at practice and I took a knee at practice and was waiting to go into the huddle. And Mike Martz came over to me and said, "How many catches do you have?" And I said, "I have no idea." And the offensive assistant at that time, his name was Adam Gase. So, which is crazy. It just blows my mind, but. Adam Gase was the offensive assistant then at the time, and so Adam said he's got 68, and I was like, "Mike, you know me, like I don't know." And Adam's like, "No, he's got 68," and I said, "All right, I got 68." And Mike said, "You better buckle." He always said, "Buckle up, buddy," and he said, "You better buckle up." And I said, "What do I need to buckle up for?" He said, "You're gonna have 100 before we're done," and so I was like, "Whatever." So, anyways, we go down to Dallas, and you know, before the season, I had signed a 1-year deal with Detroit, and so I was going to be a free agent after the season. And when you got 88 catches going into the last season, that's a pretty good year. And the coolest thing about the whole ordeal The coolest thing about the whole ordeal in the history of the Detroit Lions,
Yeah.
not a lot of 1,000-yard receivers, right?
That's right. Yes.
In the history of the Detroit Lions, respectively. But one of the coolest things is there's only been like two or three tandems, I believe, that have ever caught 1,000 in the same season. And Roy Williams at that time, it was awesome. It was
Yeah.
awesome to see. You know, I was so proud of him because of where he came from when we got there to where he ended up, you know, getting to his first Pro Bowl was outstanding. Even though it doesn't matter. Like, even though I was doing what I was doing, to watch Roy do what he did, and it was awesome to be
Yeah,
able to
and
be
the young
part of
people
that.
listening, this is before Calvin Johnson got to Detroit. So
This was the year
then he
before CJ. Yeah, the
and then
year before
Calvin broke
CJ.
every record there was. But that's another story for another time.
But and I was there. I took a knee when I shouldn't say we, but when Roy named Megatron. But anyways, so we're going into the Dallas game, and I had 88, and Roy had 1,000 yards, and I was about, I think I was like 60 yards short of 1,000, but I was 12 catches short of 100. And going down into Dallas. And I wasn't thinking I was going to get 12 catches, but you know, the good Lord's got a sense of humor. But
I mean, you got
but
10, though.
anyways, yeah. So we got on the plane, and I was playing cards with Danny. It's funny, this is gonna blow your mind, but it was Danny was sitting next to me in my seat. Josh was behind me, and Kitna was diagonal behind me. So Danny and I were together, and then Josh and John were behind us. And we played cards. We played spades all the way down on road games. And next to John sat Dan Campbell. So it's funniest thing in the world. But anyways,
Current coach of the Lions, by the way. Current coach.
So we're taking off. So we're literally taking off, and we're not even to where the bell rings yet. And Matt Millen comes over and grabs me, and he says, "Let me talk to you. Come back to the back of the plane. Let me talk to you."
Oh boy.
And at that time, I knew we had already started the contract negotiations, but you know, I've never done this before. But anyway, so Matt turns around, and Kitna, Dan, and Josh both grabbed me at the same time and was like, "Do not agree to anything. Play ball tomorrow." So I literally, Jason, I get up and I go to the back of the plane. And I do not sit back down until we're landing
Wow.
in Dallas. So the
Wow.
2-hour flight
Yeah.
back in the back, talking about you know, what could have happened tomorrow, or you know, all the negotiating tactics, right? Which was pretty cool for me to go through. But you know, my core guys and my wife, and that was it. We were past it. We were just gonna let the good Lord take care of what happened, you know, play the game, and then let the good Lord take care of what needed to be taken care of and put it in his hands, and we were at peace of that. And I didn't even think about the catches. I did think about the 1,000 yards. You know,
Sure.
I thought it would be cool. And then when I came over to the sideline one time during the Dallas game, Kit came over and said, "Hey, you're 8 yards short of 1,000 yards." And we actually went back out the next series, and I caught a not to get crazy emotional, but who would ever thought a kid from Hilliard, Ohio, that all those resilient deals that I had to go through, that you know, I caught a 5-yard crossing route, and all of a sudden I get up, you know, get forward for about 8 yards, get downfield for about 8 yards, and about a 13 or 14-yard gain, and all of a sudden I knew I had 1,000 yards in the National Football League. So
Wow.
you know, it's just, you want to talk about God moment, right?
Yeah.
And there's no way that could happen. There's just no way that could happen. And but anyways, so end up, I don't know, the touchdown that you're talking about, the infamous thing that everybody always talks about in Dallas. I caught a touchdown in Dallas and ran down the field, ran down the end line, and I threw the ball. There were so many teams that told me no, that my touchdown celebration that year became, and it started in St. Louis, where I would find the emblem of the team on the wall, and then I would just fire a fastball after I scored at the logo. And
Yeah,
I did not know
some
that
other
the
guys did that too. Yeah.
I did not know that Dallas had stars that were hanging up on the wall that actually came off the wall. So I actually threw the ball, and I threw it and just spun around, and I didn't even know the star fell. But anyways, I went back to the sideline, and Danny and John came and got me. And they were like, dude, that was awesome. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They said that you knocked the star off the wall. And so here I am thinking I'm on top of the world and all that stuff. So we end up leaving the game. And as I was walking out of the tunnel of the game, one of the top agents in the entire NFL business was waiting for me in the tunnel. One of the top guy. And I was overwhelmed by so many things of like, again, this is how God can work, right? I'm not saying that all this is going to happen to everybody, but you got to find out why God's putting you through what you're putting putting you through, and it's going to be to help someone else. But just to be able to go through all that stuff, and then the whole negotiating all the way home, on the flight home to Detroit from Dallas, and then I got home, and my wife said that, well, you got humbled. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, they interviewed Terrell Owens after the game down there in Dallas, and they said, hey, when you were a visitor here with the Eagles, you went out and danced on the star, and everybody thought everything in the world about it. And they said, well, what do you think about that celebration by by Mike Furry over there that knocked the star off the wall? And I said, well, how cool is that? And she said, yeah, Terrell Owens said, I don't even know who Mike Furry is. I said, well, we're back to earth now. So,
Yeah. And by the way, after that game, he knew who you were. Let's put it that
but
way.
it was, but again, I think that was just to me, and I still feel like this, and I felt like this the whole time, even before the catches. God has continued to prepare me and give me and allow me to succeed in areas to be able to have a platform so people will listen, right? And I think that's all that was, everything. Rather, it's the, it's funny because I just went, Detroit Lions and Allen Robinson, in his second year, we were trying to get him to 100 catches. His second year, like it's never been
With
done, like
Chicago,
once or twice in the history of Chicago Bears. And guess what he lands on in year two? 98. So him and I, so but it was that being able to talk, we could talk about it, and I wanted him to get to 100. So just funny to look back now and say, man, you gave me this 1,000 yards so that I could have a platform, or the 98 catches, or to play both ways, or to do all those kind of things,
That's cool.
so that I can, I got the helmets here, I got the Browns helmet, the Lions helmet, and people said Rams helmet that I wore, and it's like, why do you have that in your office? I said, well, it's because it allows people to open up a conversation, right? And that's how I can start reaching into them from a biblical standpoint of this is why we do stuff here the way we do it, and I'm proud to see Dan Orlovsky and those guys doing what they're doing, and all of us are still doing it to this day.
Yeah, what a great story. I'm glad we can wind down the conversation with that. I mean, we got to get the book going, Mike. We just got to get it going here because I can't imagine all the stories that you have that you didn't share on today's show. But we're going to wish you the best of luck. Certainly Limestone University, a D2 school down in South Carolina. Big season coming up here, so we're excited for you for that. And we're just grateful that you came on the show and shared your story. Great to connect with you, and thanks for joining us, man.
I appreciate it. And I can't thank you enough. So thank you so much.
And many thanks to Mike Furry from Limestone University. He's their head football coach. We didn't talk a lot about Limestone on the podcast because I mean, guys, wasn't that nuts? Like, there's so many stories that Mike shared that just blow me away. The Kurt Warner story, the Dallas Cowboys story, just the resilience and overcoming just so many, the odds stacked against him, being a defensive back and then the next year being a wide receiver and getting close to that 100 receptions. He got 98, over 1,000 yards in that 06 year. By the way, Mike Furry is the best. Here's why. Because we stayed on for like another 20 minutes and I should have kept recording. And he shared about three or four other stories in his life that God has been working. And I'm talking about personal stories, the how he became a dad, just the connection with different players, different coaches, that relationships that he made back in the day when he was just coming into the NFL, and now those relationships still coming to fruition now with different opportunities. Wow, is all I got to say about Mike Furry. There's a lot there. I'm glad I'm connected to him now. I thank Dan Orlovsky for connecting us, and I thank Mike Furry for sharing his story here today on Sports Spectrum. We got to get him back on because there's more stories to share. There just is. And I really do hope that he writes his book because I will read that book. It's very Kurt Warner-like when you think about the story of Mike Furry. So we appreciate him for sharing it here today on Sports Spectrum. And of course, we appreciate you as well for tuning in. Make sure you check out our website, sportsspectrum.com. And if you can share this podcast or tell someone about Sports Spectrum, that's the best way to be an ambassador, to be, you know, a fan of our program, our ministry. The best way to really make a difference with Sports Spectrum is just telling someone about what we're doing. And ultimately, we hope by you telling them about what we're doing, that you're telling them about Jesus, because that's our goal, is to keep Jesus in the sports conversation, because he is the only way, the only truth, and the only life. That's John 14:6. We love you guys. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time right here on Sports Spectrum.